with Radio Autonomía here in Oakland. We broadcast on Berkeley Liberation Radio. So we just wanted to hear from you, Simon Cedillo of Manavuelta Films, a little bit about this new project, Guardabosques. So if you can tell us just briefly, like a brief description of the film, and then maybe a little bit about how you got involved with the struggle in Chirán and how you came to make this film and how the film was made.
Sure. Well, basically, the driving motivation behind making this film was the fact that predominantly on the even radical left in Mexico and the United States, communities that are in the middle of this drug war situation are ignored over and over and over again. Even the most radical left folks are like, well, that's another problem, or that's another issue, and it's not really relating to our anti-capitalist or anti-imperial points of view, when in reality, it is very much so relating. The drugs are just another natural resource that is pushing people out of their communities. It's just another excuse for criminalizing indigenous self-determination, just like communism or terrorism, narcotics. It's the same thing. So for a very long time, I would avoid it myself too, because it's a very dangerous thing to be getting involved in. But I decided that it was just time that we had to do something with regards to it. So the last film that I did was about Jaraneros from Veracruz, and how they're resisting the drug war through that tool. And then I've been paying attention to the situation in Chirán, and I was just waiting for an invitation, and once I got one, it had to be done.
Awesome. And tell us a little bit about the process of making the film. You talked in the presentation about the fact that this wasn't just, you know, dropping in with a camera crew, making a documentary and getting out, right? So what was the community participation in this?
Well, first of all, I had to go through like an approval process with the Consejo Mayor, the general council of the community, and they were very welcoming, mainly because of my work around militarism and paramilitarism that is published and widely distributed on the internet, so they were able to kind of back it up that way. And then they just kind of were like, well, go ahead and do what you're going to do. What I did was, I like working with youth. I feel like young people are always going to have a fresh perspective on everything. And if you're not, like, staying close to where they're at, then you're probably full of crap, you know? So I decided to work with the youth at the radio station, because they were clearly already organized and clearly very motivated. And they had already done a couple of workshops with different people. But most of the workshops, they weren't very happy with how they were done, or they were kind of like just soft core, or people that were like very arrogant or very bossy or whatever, and weren't really just kind of go with the groove. We got along great. And as we got along and became friends, it became a lot easier to get things rolling. And yeah, they all participated in the filming. They all participated in the decision-making process of what we were going to focus on. We didn't have any sort of screenplay or script or anything like that. It all just came out from the interviews, and then we would all listen to the interviews together and decide what was the most important direction to take the film. And it was participatory pretty much in every step of the way.
Awesome.
A big part of the film is kind of like a documentation of explorations of community policing and also the radio. But could you talk about, for the folks who may not get to see the film, like what is the form of community policing and how it's kind of helped establish autonomy within the Chirán region?
For sure. We've seen different strategies of community policing throughout Mexico, in particular southern Mexico, and the state of Guerrero is the most famous, I think, now for 17 years. They've had different communities are doing varying strategies of community policing. In Chirán, basically, the community policing, they don't like even calling it community policing because they don't like the word policing at all. When they engaged in the uprising, immediately they referred to their elders in order to extrapolate traditional strategies of self-governance. And it was the elders that talked to them about what they call the community ronda, right, which is what they call it instead of community police. And it was a strategy that was utilized traditionally before there were ever police and political parties in the region. So they just went back to this strategy of policing. However, they took over the cops' trucks and their weapons and now have a uniform that looks very much like police. And the reasoning behind this is that people that are not from the community, that are not aware of what's going on, are more likely to disrespect somebody that is not in uniform and not respect what's going on. So outsiders that see folks in the uniform, they're used to seeing checkpoints with people in uniform, right? So they're like, okay, well, I have to stop, because this is an official checkpoint. And the people are like, it is an official checkpoint. It's our checkpoint, right? So that's kind of the strategy. They're using uniforms in order to be respected by outsiders, but they don't believe in the power that a uniform carries the way the state does, you know, in those ways, and they don't abuse power that way. The number one thing that they say that makes it successful is that the ronda, or the guardabosques, the forest defenders that are, or the forest keepers that are working in the forest region, they are community members. Therefore, they can be held accountable by the community at any given point, whereas the municipal police that was there before were outsiders that had no investment in the community's well-being, right? So with everybody, I mean, in day-to-day situations like dealing with a drunk or whatever, well, it's probably like your cousin, you know? So you're less likely to beat the crap out of your cousin as opposed to talk to him and be like, all right, come on, let's go to the holding tank so you can sober up and stuff like that, so...
And as we've seen in Chiapas and Oaxaca and now in Cheran, women were at the forefront of launching this uprising, right? And this rebellion and this complete transformation here.
Absolutely. There were several men that were assassinated, confronting it on their own or in mm-hmm. small groups at the beginning. But when it came to the Ya Basta, mm-hmm. it was all women mm-hmm. and their children that initiated the uprising.
And what's the role of women in the kind of day-to-day sort of functioning of Cheran now? I mean, as you talked about in the presentation, obviously the involvement of women in the actual security and self-defense force is really difficult, right? Uh-huh. And really not happening to the degree that, of course, we would all like to see mm-hmm. for many, many reasons. So what has been the kind of participation of women, or how do you see women as protagonists in this kind of ongoing struggle?
Well, there is, in the major council, there is one woman who was elected, and there are six community ronda that are women okay. as well. I don't want to speak without, like, really knowing for sure, but my feeling is that there's a different type of women, the different type of power that women hold in the community mm-hmm. that is more of, like, the social fabric of everything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was them that pushed the men into gear, right? And once the men got into gear, then the sisters went back to holding down the mm-hmm. social fabric mm-hmm. of the community. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to the decision-making process, it's done in general assemblies, and that is where you see the participation of all the women okay. in the community, and who are very vocal and very aggressive mm-hmm. and very on point with mm-hmm. the politics behind what is decided and what is not decided as a whole.
Could you talk a little bit more about what's happening now in Paran, specifically about the struggle with the illegal logging that's still happening, and also the organized crime that's related to illegal logging?
I mean, it's an ongoing battle, and it will be an ongoing battle. Things are a lot better. Local businesses don't have to pay protection. There haven't been, like, mass murders in the city by the drug dealers. Things like that haven't been really happening at the rate that they were happening. You can walk around alone at night, things like that that they didn't have before. But the power interests are still there. The political parties that are in cahoots with the drug lords are very much so still just trying to get a foothold in the community. The government is still trying to get involved. So it's an ongoing battle. But for right now, it seems that the community is winning that battle.
So the film shows a lot about the use of radio as a weapon, right? The kids in the video that are running Radio Fogata use that language, right? That the radio is one of their weapons in the struggle and in this ongoing process in Cheran. So can you talk a little bit about sort of the role of independent and alternative media, both in Cheran, and how you see a film like this and a media project like this building on that and as part of that?
Uh-huh. I think that... what we're coming to the conclusion of everywhere in southern Mexico and in indigenous communities all over is that we can use technologies that are considered not as advanced to our ends, right? And radio is a key one. Like, the internet is helpful to get your message out to the world, but the internet isn't as helpful in securing your entire community. But a radio, everybody can have a radio. In the uprising in 2006 in Oaxaca, it was a fundamental tool. With the Zapatistas, it's a fundamental tool. With the community police in Guerrero, it's a fundamental tool. And it only made sense that it would also happen in Cheran. And it happened almost immediately after the uprising started. So we're seeing these technologies, these older technologies, as viable tools for community self-determination and self-defense. I think that everybody's getting excited about the different possibilities. We've been looking at doing some stuff with television as well, and folks are excited about that. I don't know. I just think it's the logical thing to be doing. If you're going to be uprising and organizing your community for self-determination and self-defense, radio is going to be the first thing you need to be getting down with. And I think that they just logically went to it.
Yeah. And you are on a U.S. tour right now with this film, Guardabosques. So what's your hope why take this film on tour in the U.S.?
I've been doing tours to the U.S. Once every 6 months for the last 8 years with a different film every 6 months. And been building a base throughout the United States. My main source of income is university honorariums. That's how we're able to make this work happen, be able to travel back and forth, how I'm able to live. Mm-hmm. But the real point is that I do these presentations at universities, but then I also do presentations in community centers. Mm-hmm. And that's the real place that I want to be. My purpose is I only bring 100 copies of the film. We never enter into any sort of festivals. We never distribute in any other way. It's rather face-to-face, intimate interactions with people that we're sharing and building with to fortify networks of self-defense across the border, right? And have people just be aware of what's going on, have them have the information in their hot little hands so they can share it with their friends. But it's that face-to-face sharing and building, I think, that in the long run is making a very strong binational network for us, mm-hmm. given whatever may happen, good things or bad things. We can just be in touch, be in communication, and react to whatever happens.
For sure.
Folks are interested in finding more about the film. Will it be eventually posted on the internet, or where can folks find more information about Tehran specifically or the film?
For sure. Right now, just check out elenemigocomun.net. And right there we have pictures and articles and audio and different things coming out now from Tehran. There's a good article and a good trailer for the film that is like screenable in and of itself. It's like a little short 8-minute piece. And once the U.S. tour is done, we'll move it around Mexico for like 3 months. And once that's done, we'll put it online. And the whole film will be available online.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Simon.
Thank you all.
Yeah.